complete with excessive bloodshed, extensive collateral damage, widespread pervasive financial ruin, the inability of the survivors to give even the normal dignity of proper burial to their dead.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
And again, good morning. Probably almost all of you are used to the fact that I like to start a sermon with something kind of lighthearted and funny. If you paid attention as you read the responsive reading this morning, it wasn't a very lighthearted and funny passage, and it did not inspire in me any other lighthearted and funny way to begin this message, so I'm going to start with something else equally depressing. I have, over the last few years, tried to make a special study of a couple of things in Japan and Japanese culture. It started when I was doing a study of suicide in general and discovered that Japan has the highest suicide rate of any nation on earth. And their lead is so well established that second place is just barely visible back there in the distance. Japan is number one, bar none, in suicides. Over the past several decades, suicide has been the leading cause of death in Japanese men between the ages of 20 and 44. More than any kind of illness, more than any kind of accident, more than any kind of natural disaster. And if you recall, in this period, Japan has had some pretty big natural disasters and accidents to measure against. And nevertheless, suicide has been for nearly half a century the leading cause of death among men 20 to 44. Last year, in 2016, Japan celebrated a 40-year low in suicides when only about 30,000 Japanese men killed themselves. 40-year low. The causes are complex, but everyone agrees that it mostly has to do with post-World War II reconstruction. The emperor, Hirohito, at the time, was held by his people to be a deity representing the spirit of the entire Japanese nation and people. He was to be honored. He was to be worshipped. He was to be obeyed without question. There is very little doubt that this led to some of the atrocities committed in the course of the war. But as you know, Japan lost the war. And you need to understand something about the way in which they lost the war. Never mind the soldiers on the field of combat. Virtually in 1 week, Japan lost 250,000 civilian lives and watched about a third of their nation's wealth go up in smoke. They saw the sudden, catastrophic creation of a new homeless population, millions strong. And a foreign power occupied their land and put strings on their exalted emperor. All of these things, and right, wrong, good, bad, the results of war, however you want to figure it, all of these things were terribly traumatic for the Japanese people and culture. General MacArthur managed the reconstruction, and again, right or wrong, he and his peers judged that Japan was not what they called a mature nation, and they required special handling appropriate to a more childlike, they said, people. Thus, while Germany was made to face the nature of the evils that they had visited upon the earth, Japan was encouraged to think that they and their godlike emperor had simply been hoodwinked by those mean old Germans into doing things that would never have occurred to them otherwise. We allowed the office of emperor for life to stand, wrote it into the new constitution that we wrote for the Japanese people because we thought that the office of emperor for life represented the best handle that we could put on things to give us a way to control and manage this allegedly simplistic people. But Hirohito was stripped of his sacred white vestments and dressed in a dark three-piece Western suit and fedora and told what to say and told when to say it. Hirohito lived and reigned into the 1980s, and on his death was replaced by his son, the new and still reigning emperor for life, Akihito. All incredibly demoralizing for the Japanese people. But Western and Eastern sociologists alike have concluded what they think is the absolute worst in the midst of all of this. And it is, they say, that Japan was never allowed, not only not encouraged, but allowed to deal with their guilt. It was all just kind of passed over, but they were left with that awful feeling. Well, if we're not guilty, how come the occupation and Western management goes on and on and on? Only in recent years as Emperor Akihito, and by the way, I don't know if anybody caught this the last few years, but it was in the news. Akihito wants to resign. He wishes to cease being emperor. He cannot, because according to the constitution that we wrote, emperor is still in office for life. And the current emperor has no power to change the constitution. So, Akihito is stuck where he is, like it or not. But it has only been in recent years that Akihito has begun to lead his people to acknowledge their guilt. Maybe we were wrong to think that the Koreans and the Chinese were racially inferior to us and we could treat them in any way that pleased us. Maybe our imperial war machine was a mistake from the beginning. Maybe we were wrong. It is only in light of these acknowledgments that the suicide rate has begun to decline from absolutely catastrophic to simply horrible. Now, I am sure that that is the kind of uplifting and inspiring thing you fought through the floodwaters this morning to get here for. I will add that the benefit of 2020 hindsight does not give me the right to judge those who were in charge of such policies at the time, policies put in place under difficult circumstances by fallible men laboring under intense pressure and who wanted more than anything else to see that the Japanese did not side with the Russians as they had with the Germans. and MacArthur and Company were at least successful in that. What I want you to understand is the stakes were high. But I tell you this story because the 79th Psalm puts me in mind of it. Israel had suffered a catastrophic, humiliating defeat, invasion, occupation by a foreign power. Scholars are divided over whether it is the Chaldean invasion or the Babylonian invasion that forms the context for Psalm 79. But you can take your pick because both were complete with excessive bloodshed, extensive collateral damage, widespread pervasive financial ruin, the inability of the survivors to give even the normal dignity of proper burial to their dead, and a host of sneering, swaggering foreigners who like to ask questions like, "Hey, where was your God when we showed up, huh? I don't think your God did a very good job protecting you against us." The answer to such questions is actually simple. God was right where he had always been. It was Israel who had moved. They had moved right out from under his sheltering hand. And they had paid a horrible price for their departure from his courts. And again, right or wrong, deserved or undeserved, people tend to be unhappy when they have to pay significant, horrible prices. And Israel, as all people do, engaged in a lot of the normal ways of denying or justifying or objecting to the price of their foolishness. You saw these things as we read through the psalm. "It's the fault of our ancestors. Our ancestors were wrong. Don't punish us for the crimes of our ancestors." You know, it comes down to, "See, Grandpa was bad and Dad was worse. I never had a chance. I didn't know any better. How could I have done different with my ancestors setting the stage the way that they did?" You know, God has an answer to that. Those who are with me in my Sunday school class studying the book of Romans know that in the very first chapter, Paul says, "God put the law in our hearts and we have always known what was right and wrong." For Israel, of course you knew that it was wrong to abuse the orphan and exploit the widow and sell the poor for the price of a pair of shoes. You knew. And if you didn't know, I want you to think about that long line of prophets that I sent you, one after another, to your grandfather's generation, to your father's generation, to your generation, who told you exactly what needed to be changed if you were to avoid punishment, and you refused to listen. "For whose sins shall a man die?" God asks. And he answers, "For his own and not another's." Well, okay, maybe we did wrong, but not nearly as much wrong as these cruel, violent foreigners who are currently giving us so much trouble. How about you give those guys the smackdown that they so richly deserve and get off our backs just a little bit? I mean, sure, we strayed, but they've never called on your name in the first place. How about them? Huh? Huh? It kind of puts me in mind of that situation where you were speeding and you got pulled over and you're getting a ticket for speeding, which you were doing. And while you're sitting there fuming about the ticket for the speeding, which you were doing, you fume about all those people who are zipping by just as fast as you, maybe some of them faster, but he's writing that ticket for you. Huh? Okay, maybe they're speeding too. Maybe they're speeding worse than you did. But you were speeding, weren't you? Okay. Well, then have a little pity on us for the sake of the innocent. There's lots of innocents in Israel, women and children at least, and they shouldn't have to suffer right along with the guilty. Have pity on us for their sake. This always sounds like asking that the innocent not be made to pay for the crimes of the guilty, but in reality it always amounts to asking that the guilty be let off the hook for the sake of the innocent. Oh, okay, we get it. You are justifiably angry with us, but surely the punishment that you have already heaped upon us is enough. Do you plan on staying mad at me forever? Can't we ease up just a little? All this and more of the like posturing is contained in the psalm. It does no harm to the authority of Scripture to recognize that people are prone to whine when they have been busted for their wrongdoings and must pay the price for their foolishness. But there is here in the midst of all the whining at least the kernel of something more positive, something that will actually do some good, a plain, old-fashioned recognition of guilt. Verse 9. Help us, O God of our salvation. Deliver us and forgive our sins. And the gold nugget of the passage, so we, your people, and the sheep of your pasture, will give thanks to you forever. To all generations, we will tell of your praise. Now, the inappropriate is still in there because you can read this way. When God, when you have afflicted all these dirty, rotten pagans seven times as bad as you are afflicting us, then we will give thanks. It's there a little bit. But there's better things too. And I think the best of them is this. God is to be thanked and praised because He is not content to let us remain the way we are. I need you to hear that. Because I think it is possibly the single most important thing that we can recognize about God. He is to be thanked and praised because He is not content to let us remain the way we are. What will He do to make it possible to begin to effect a change in us? Will He shed blood? Apparently. Rivers of blood? Okay. Because as it turns out, He will shed the blood of His own Son to make it possible for us not to continue in the way that we are. We humans are a sad and fallen race, guilty of great evils. The Japanese did not invent the concept of wartime atrocities. The Chaldeans and the Babylonians were there long before them. America is not innocent. Think of slavery and abortion, just for starters. All humankind is a sad and fallen race. And if I pick just one thing for which I am most thankful this Thanksgiving season, and by the way, how many of you believe that you could identify two things for which you should be thankful this Thanksgiving season? Three? Four? Five? How high would I have to go before I started losing you? We are a blessed people, are we not? just one note of positivity in the midst of this sermon. But if I pick the one thing for which I am most thankful, it is this. God is not content to let us remain as we are. It begins with the simple acknowledgement of our guilt. Nothing good can happen without that. It continues with the acceptance of His grace, and it ends with our transformation into the image of Jesus Christ. Let us consider our past life and the new life that God holds up before us and ask for what could we ever possibly be more thankful. So we, your people, sheep of your pasture, give thanks to you forever. To all generations, we will tell of your praise. Because you have redeemed me and begun to make me like your own son. If that describes you, lift up thanks to God. If it doesn't describe you, know simply that it can. And it can begin right now.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.